Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path.
This adoption, which historically in wealth has been low for new tech, has completely shifted.
There is this kind of heaviness of inefficiency in a lot of advisors' practices. Every incremental piece of value we want to add is like this heavy weight.
If you asked advisors in 2024, what do you want out of AI? Almost all of them said the same thing: create the capacity for me to engage with my clients. What is AI going to do for advisors? If iteration one was all about efficiency, number two is all about effectiveness. So how can I be better on every call?
In today's episode, we're going to be hanging out with Liam Hanlon from Jump. So Jump is probably the most talked about AI tool right now within our industry as far as note-taking and how can advisors start using AI. Generally, my impression is that our industry is going to be slow to adoption, but Liam has some really great insights today on parts of our industry that are adopting AI and efficiency much quicker, which is promising. So be thinking about your practice today as we talk about it. Where are you using AI effectively? And what admin tasks are maybe taking up time in your week that you can try to offload as quick as possible? You don't have to implement AI across the board overnight, but are there ways you can start using it sooner? Liam has some great insights for us. Liam, thanks for being here, buddy.
Yeah, Sten, thanks for having me.
Bet. We're going to talk about how AI is going to replace financial advisors. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I'm not the guy then.
That's right. Yeah, we tricked you on being here. No. Man, I'm glad you're here. I'd love to hear kind of your path to getting with Jump, you know, some brief background. And then really today, we want to talk about the best uses of AI to make advisors more effective. This is what I've kind of heard you say before. It's not replacing us. I think there's some lower tier ways of using AI just so you can say you check the box. But like if you were optimizing AI and it was helping you be a better advisor, a better coach, what would that look like? So we're going to get to the root of that today. But yeah, I'd love for everybody listening to know your background a little bit.
Absolutely. I've got a great story and not a lot of people ask, but I was at Ernst & Young in the strategy consulting department for wealth and asset management firms for 7 years, based out of New York, previous to Jump. So I was servicing the largest financial wealth institutions in the world. Think Morgan Stanley's, JP Morgan's, Edward Jones. I'm not saying they're exact names because we're a consulting firm, but those are the type of firms. And at the end of my run there, I was leading our go-to-market efforts for AI solutions. So bringing different vendors to clients. And a part of this was every Friday, I would interview a wealth tech founder, co-founder, or an executive at a firm to introduce it first to my people. I wouldn't set up these interviews. I would just kind of come in blind. And on one fateful Friday, Parker Entz, the CEO of Jump, was on the other side of my screen. I'd never heard of Jump. This was like 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago now. And I heard his pitch and just like a light bulb went off. And I was like, this is gold, what they're creating. And I think they were at maybe 4,000 advisors at the time using their product very early on in their journey. I texted Parker after. I was like, can I introduce you to a bunch of my clients? He said, yes. After we did that a few times, I was like, look, I think it's obvious to see. I'm like, I'm all in. I like Jump more than I like EY. Don't tell EY that. But what can I do to get you to hire me? And we figured it out. So that's the background. So I landed at Jump.
Nice. And for everybody listening, what is Jump? What's the main mission? And what's the biggest problem you guys are solving?
Originally, mission statement was reduce the advisor's time spent on admin and maintenance by 90%. While elevating the client experience. That was our North Star. And the way we were doing that was we were a note taker that sat on advisors' calls. And after the calls, the AI would summarize that note and create a bunch of outputs that the advisor could then just one click and update their CRM based on what happened in the meetings, or their financial planning tool, or their estate planning tool. And that the integrations have grown, and so have we as a company. That was the original mission statement. But now that we're at 33,000 financial advisors, and AI has obviously developed, and the tech has developed since the beginning, our mission has changed. It's not only to reduce the amount of time, but also enhance the advisor's effectiveness on calls and with clients, not just to elevate client experience by reducing the amount of admin and giving them more time to spend with their clients, but also in those interactions, making them better practitioners, better advisors.
Nice. That's great. So what are you seeing with advisors when it comes to implementation of AI? I'm sensing, as I talk to people, that our industry is probably not going to be on the forefront of AI. You know, there's a lot of resistance, a lot of compliance, but Jump is becoming one of the names to where you're hearing it routinely around AI in the wealth management space. So what are you guys learning live with advisors as far as, are they pretty receptive? Does the firm have to approve it and then tell them to use it? What's that look like?
That depends on the type of firm, but let me back up a second. So your assumption or hypothesis that we wouldn't be on the forefront of innovation is one that I held as well for a long time. And in 2023, University of Chicago did a research study across 11 professions, white collar professions. So teachers, accountants, lawyers, advisors were one of them. What they were measuring was, do you use AI at work and do you use it at home? So personally and professionally. Of the 11 professions that they studied, advisors had the lowest adoption of all 11. So teachers were beating advisors, almost every white collar profession. Now, fast forward to this year, Craig Iskovitz just released a study on AI note takers that says 70% or even more than 70% of RIAs now have adopted a note taker, which is the number one adopted use case. And when I go to conferences, which I do way too often, I ask the room, you know, who here uses AI in their day-to-day workflow? And almost every single hand goes up. So this adoption, which historically in wealth has been low for new tech, has completely shifted. And it's because for the first time ever, AI has allowed us to solve real problems for advisors and give them back time in their day to do what they do best, which is interact with the client. That's what they've always wanted to do. Tech has never been solving that problem for us in the past. 60% of our users save between 1 to 3 hours per day, which is unfathomable. Almost every single one of our users saves time because of Jump, but 60% are saving 250 hours per year or more. So the adoption curve has changed. Now, how advisors adopt Jump based on their firm and their size is a complex issue. So if you're a firm like a Morgan Stanley, who we don't work with, but if you were, you're a W-2 advisor, you know, the 16,000 advisors that work for Morgan. And so your firm buys a solution and then mandates the use of that solution. And so advisors get to log in. They don't necessarily have to, but they have access. Now, they can't go rogue. They can't use any solutions on their own. And this is what really has made RIAs actually have a leg up over the wirehouses in the past 3 years is now RIAs can adopt all of this amazing tech. The smaller the RIA is, obviously, the less oversight from a home office. So they can adopt tech with speed and start to become that like AI advisor, while the Morgan Stanleys of the world, which, by the way, there's a lot of pros and cons to both use cases, but in this one particular, they'll have to wait for their firm and all of their lawyers and their legal risk and compliance departments to green light an initiative and give them access. So it's given the RIAs a leg up in the past few years.
What are you seeing with, and I've seen different charts and graphs where a majority of advisors, like the money that's managed, the industry is, you know, 90% of those players, and the RIAs like us, while mighty, you know, and we're doing our thing, make up a fraction of the assets under management or the kind of the meat of our industry. And so I love the idea that, like, if you can get the message in front of somebody that can make a decision, those entrepreneurs are making that choice.
Yeah.
What is Jump seeing? It's coming to the industry as a whole. It's just going to take time. We'll see it ubiquitous in a couple of years. It's a 10-year thing. How are you guys approaching that?
Well, a few things. So number one, the RIAs in, let's say 10 years ago, used to have a much smaller market share. The first project I ever did in consulting, it was 8 years ago, an internal project, not my first ever, but, and it was called The Rise of RIAs. And it was using Cerulli data that showed that the RIA compound annual growth rate of headcount was growing at a speed that was unmatched by any other vertical within wealth, and wirehouses were actually going down. So the Morgans, the Merrills of the world, the Ed Jones, they were declining in headcount. RIAs were going up. When you asked advisors why, it was because of autonomy and the promise of higher pay. Now, to your point, AUM has been taking a little bit longer to catch up, but now we're seeing RIAs are actually controlling about 50% of the AUM in the country. It's a 50-50 split. And I'm reducing this down to two verticals. There are many different wealth verticals, independent broker dealers, wirehouses, insurance affiliated broker dealers. Mm-hmm. There's hundreds if you want to slice it and dice it that way. But if you just look at it from a registered independent versus wirehouse W-2, now it's about a 50-50 split within the industry. So we started by servicing registered independents because we had a product that we believed was more suited for them at the time. We're all about, at the end of the day, enhancing client experience. A lot of RIAs aren't in the business of selling products or services. They're selling their advice, and they're doing that either for a percentage of assets under management or a flat fee. It's typically more holistic and revolves around planning, but they're not trying to cross-sell things. So that's really where our product was, our bread and butter was in. It was in that arena. Now, as we start to sign some of the larger accounts, the Equitables of the world, the Allianz's, the John Hancock's, Manulife, John Hancock's, if you will. Now we're seeing that our product needs to change a little bit to cater to those audiences as well. Obviously, our core product will always service the RIAs, but these two different verticals care about different things. That's true even in the RIA space. Rob Nance, CEO of Dispatch, has a great quote. I think it's Rob Nance. If I misquote him, I apologize, Rob. But it's, once you've met one RIA, you've met one RIA. So I think our, like, you know, guiding light is our customization. Every advisor has a different way of doing things. And so what we've really relied on is our ability to, yes, produce the highest quality technology right out of the box, but then give the users at each vertical, at each level, the ability to customize Jump the way they want to get the most out of it.
Nice. So one thing, a term we use internally is maximum value with extreme efficiency. I think as I was a young advisor and I was, you know, getting more confident, getting more clients, I was like, especially in the planning space, I was like, the goal is to charge bigger and bigger fees. And the larger the fee, the more that represents that, you know, you're solving bigger problems for people. But then you do hit a point where I'm like, maybe charging more is not always the best idea. Like, what if profitability became about, like, delivering the same thing in a fraction of the time?
Yeah.
And as a young advisor, I just wanted to be more knowledgeable. I wanted to get clients off of, you know, just solving those problems by any way necessary. And I do sense, as I coach and speak to other advisors, like, there is this kind of heaviness of inefficiency in a lot of advisors' practices that every incremental piece of value we want to add is like this heavy weight. And so we're trying to shift, you know, and what's challenging, I mean, a lot of advisors, they're making enough money. Like, there's not this burning on fire problem to solve, but we all know we could be doing it better.
Yeah.
With the RIAs you're running into, how are you creating the urgency of, like, no, trust me, you need to go this way when a lot of factors are saying you could just keep doing what you're doing now?
That's a phenomenal question. So, and it comes down to value proposition. So the value proposition of technology, typically, right, a SaaS product, a software product like ours, it's one value prop because your core customer is the same. Now, going back to that point that everyone's individual, but RIAs, to your point, aren't trying to squeeze percentages out of clients. And maybe that is what the wirehouse want. So if we can tell a wirehouse, hey, through our product and our insights, you can increase your ability to convert prospects to clients by 2% at a firm that's large enough, like a Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan, that would mean hundreds of millions of dollars worth of AUM. For an RIA with 10 advisors that's running a great shop, that means almost nothing. So what does each of these two firms or two types of firms, and again, reducing down to the two, but what do they care about? Our value proposition to RIAs is client experience, giving you time back. The average advisor spends 53 hours per week working. And in 2018, when Kitsis did his foundational study on how advisors spend their time, you could see that over 10 hours a week was admin and maintenance. And we're not saying that you're trying to over-optimize your day and get rid of all of your admin, all of your maintenance. But if it's activities that don't put you in front of the client, that don't help you generate revenue, that don't help you generate referrals, or that don't give you your time back, it's a great indication that that's something that you would want to get rid of. 10 hours spent on admin and maintenance was the burden that we were reducing. For a large firm, it could be more about the ROI of our technology. Those value propositions are just inherently different from one another. And again, it comes down to the tech serving all of the verticals, not just within wealth. Now we're signing up insurance professionals, tax professionals, accounting, so on and so forth. Every vertical within financial services is finding value in our product and not necessarily for the same thing or for the same reason.
Traditional advisors sell products. Elite advisors prospect with ideas. On July 29th at 2 p.m. Central, I'm hosting a free live training with Matt Kemp and Ian Williams on how to use R&D tax credits to open doors with business owners as potential prospects. This isn't a tax lecture, it's a prospecting system. We'll show you who it fits for, how to identify the right opportunities, and how to confidently start conversations that lead to new relationships. Just click the link in the show notes or visit gobeelite.com/RD. That's gobeelite.com/RD. I'll see you there. When it comes to compliance, like what wall do you guys seem to hit first? Yeah. Is it the privacy and security piece of it? I'm curious from an outsider, where I'm just an advisor in the trenches with other advisors. I know there's conversations that happen at a higher level when it comes to tech.
Sure.
That to an advisor would be like, this is a no-brainer, I want to use it. And then people are like, well, you can't use it.
Yeah.
What are you guys usually running into?
I mean, first and foremost, it's education and awareness. This is novel technology. And so the larger your legal risk and compliance team is, the more strict they are, the more regulations you have to adhere to or policies. And so because it's a new technology, they need to first educate themselves on exactly what the dangers are. So our first meetings with larger firms are, here's exactly what we do. Here's how your data is or is not used, where it goes, your ownership over it. It's very much just showing them the ropes. The next step is each one of them have individual needs. We have different data retention policies. Do you want audio? Do you want video? Do you want this transcript to be kept for 7 days, 30 days? Who do you want it to be shared with? Do you want your meetings shared with your entire team, your entire organization, so on and so forth? Mm-hmm. There are hundreds and hundreds of account settings, and we go through each one of them. Every single one of them, there is no bound to what we can do. If you want a retention policy, meaning your transcript is retained for X amount of days, if you want it for 0 days, 0 days is an option. If you want it in perpetuity, perpetuity is an option and everything in between. So flexibility is the second thing. So education and awareness, then you have to be flexible. You have to allow people to customize. And then, this is a growing field. And so FINRA comes out with new policies and new things to adhere to on an annual basis. And it's about being at the forefront of change, making sure that you have a head of security that is dialed in to everything that the industry is doing. And we certainly do. And then making sure that whatever policies we need to adhere to, we're the first to act. I think those are the three things that are critical and what compliance teams care about. We could get into the nitty gritty of like the individual pieces, but it's really those three things at a high level.
Is it fair to say it's just a matter of time? Like some firms will take longer, but the idea that someday there will be a firm still not recording and using technology, that would be silly to assume some firms will be able to avoid it forever. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it is a matter of time. We've already seen the adoption within the RIA channel. Now we're seeing it in the enterprise channel. We're seeing it in these adjacent markets. It just feels like a no-brainer. And once you get comfortable with all of the customizable account settings that I just talked through, you almost see that the risk is so, so low. There's risk in everything, but there's almost no risk in your data ever being accessed. If you have a 0-day retention policy, there is no data to access, so on and so forth. Once legal risk and compliance teams are aware of those protocols that we put in place and their ability to customize their own settings, it begins to be a no-brainer. The businesses are already aligned with the initiatives. They want this stuff. It's the compliance teams that do move slower, and rightfully so. Their jobs are to protect the firm, and that means doing a robust amount of due diligence for every new piece of technology.
Yeah, that makes sense. So thinking about like the advisor team, I'm a big believer, like it'd be really hard to deliver a great experience as a solo advisor. Because to your point earlier, like the admin load alone will cause you to not live in your superpower of being a coach, a curator of great ideas. So a team of, there's an advisor, maybe one admin. I would even argue that's not enough, because then as an advisor, you're probably still doing data input, things you shouldn't be doing. So advisor, junior, associate advisor, one or two admin. You get to a point where you're like, okay, with this team, I can deliver great experience and great advice consistently.
Yeah.
You then see, you know, we may have 100,000 headcount advisor shortage by 2030 or so. I don't know if we'll need 100,000 to replace that gap necessarily. The way I'm viewing it is now my current team, which is 8 of us, like we can do a lot more. I don't need to get rid of anybody.
Right.
But it means we can optimize, and maybe one person on my team does twice what I thought they were capable of.
Yeah.
This is maybe not directly in Jump's wheelhouse, but I know with your background in consulting, like how are you seeing the advisor team headcount changing over time?
I think what we will see, and what's already happening, anecdotally, I talk to a lot of advisors at conferences. They have repositioned their WMAs, their paraplanners, their admins to do more advice-related activities. We could see that gap of advice professionals begin to close, because the tasks that those admins were doing previously, now they can do in half the time. They can spend the other half of the time becoming practitioners, growing the practice, taking over a book of business, and closing this gap of generational wealth that we see emerging. I know it was the McKinsey study that said we'll be, 100,000 advisors short. I think that might be one of the answers. The other part of the answer is certainly what you just said. There's been research done. I think Kitsis has adapted research that had been done in academic literature in the past that said the average advisor can only, have 150 meaningful relationships. That was before all of the admin and operations and maintenance had been taken over by AI. So how does that change is the question. Yeah. Can you have 400 without degrading any of the client experiences that you have to maintain? And then the third piece is not taking over advisors, but there's going to be a large portion of the population that is underserved. I'll call it the mid-market. So you probably, you most certainly have an AUM fee that is like the minimum amount that makes sense for you to work with. And it's because the economics of the job just don't pencil out. If you start working with people like myself, that's probably well under your fee. And so we could service those people with great advice, with a different business model. Maybe it's one advisor, but 90% of the job is done by AI, and you get to call that advisor or that professional or consultant when you need them, but it's much, much less frequent than when you speak to your clients. So I think those three things could solve this problem in the industry.
Nice. So for advisors, obviously in the one vertical we're talking about, they have less control. They're maybe hopefully asking the powers that be, hey, please approve something like this. In the RIA space you're working with, what does that look like? They hear from a fellow advisor they should use it. They reach out to you guys. How does somebody usually get acquainted with JUMP and then implement it?
Referrals are certainly, in your business and in ours, the number one way to get a prospect to convert to a client and to get connected with a prospect. We actually really didn't do any marketing for a year. We did some. I posted on LinkedIn. We had others post. And we had a marketing department, but we weren't doing any, we weren't putting any real dollars behind our marketing efforts. And in that year, we grew from, you know, 6,000 over the 18 months, 6,000 to 33,000 advisors. It's all word of mouth. The advisor community is tight knit. There are a ton of events that these advisors go to and forums and webinars and so on and so forth. And social proof is one of the strongest behavioral factors when adopting new technology. If I see somebody like Sten Morgan, who I respect as an advisor and I trust their opinion, adopting a piece of technology, I'm much, much more likely to adopt it myself. So we've benefited greatly off of that. And now that we are just in a more mature stage of the adoption curve, we have to put a little more effort into our marketing schemes and the way that we reach advisors. Advisors are on LinkedIn, but they don't necessarily make decisions. They're not really on Reddit. Although I tend to look at the CFP sub every once in a while as a outsider, just catching up on my day-to-day Reddit. And then, you know, the other social medias, TikTok, it's not for advisors. There's a ton of blogs, podcasts, webinar series, so on and so forth. So finding advisors is a challenge, and I can't give away the secret sauce there, but that is really what it's about.
Got it. Elite advisors don't just consume information, they implement it. That's why we created a free companion guide for every new Elite Advisor episode. A practical tool that'll help you turn today's conversation into real action. Inside, you'll find a concise summary, insights, and actionable next steps you can take to put this to work immediately. Just click the link in the show notes or visit gobeelite.com/guide today. So as you look forward, everything you guys have accomplished, what are you most excited about right now? Like, are you guys working on something new? Where's this all going? Is it, hey, we're just going to impact the industry more? The offering we have is exactly what we need. We just need more bodies. What's that looking like?
I think the promise of AI originally, if you asked advisors in 2024, what do you want out of AI? Almost all of them said the same thing, create the capacity for me to engage with my clients. I think we're past that point of this evolution of AI and wealth, and we're looking forward to the next evolution. What is AI going to do for advisors? And I think there's two things. Number one, if iteration one was all about efficiency, number two is all about effectiveness. So how can I be better on every call? We do work with firms, large firms, small firms, that analyze their own conversations, and you can find ways that you can convert more of your prospects to clients based on what you've said. If you have, as a firm, thousands of meetings between advisors and prospects, that's a sample size that's big enough to say, and here in the successful use cases are the three to four things that actually increase your advisor's likelihood of success of converting a prospect to a client. So that's number one, using conversational intelligence to create a more effective advisor. And then number two is AI for action, right? Not just being an awareness, and obviously all of our automations that exist are incredibly useful between the CRM and the rest of the tech stack. But now think about some of the most labor intensive tasks like account opening and onboarding. You know, we have on our roadmap here and a little sneak peek, will be some truly end-to-end agentic experiences where if I'm talking to you live, Sten, and you and you're my advisor, and I say, Sten, I think I do want to open that 529 account, right? The process could kick off right then and there. And the account, by the time we're done speaking, could already be ready for signatures to open that account. Or something like, prospecting. If you have a lead list, let's say, of 100 prospects, this is one of the banes of the advisor's existence, getting 100 leads and then having email set up the time, you know, so on and so forth. What if all of that upfront work could just be taken over by an agentic experience? We got the lead list. The advisor doesn't even need to see it. We can prioritize it based on profile data. We can reach out to those prospects, and then we can schedule the time. We have an in-house Calendly as well. All the advisor needs to do is check in every once in a while for a human in the loop and say, yeah, schedule that time. All of a sudden, they've spent, instead of 2 hours on every prospect trying to get them on the phone, 5 minutes, and then they have a meeting set up. So that's exciting for us. Truly end-to-end agentic experiences, really AI for action, doing actions for the advisor, not just, surfacing them.
Yeah, no, that is exciting. I speak to advisors and I think of myself too, it's like, which group do you fall in? Are you a, resist change at all costs because it's uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Are you a late adopter? You want to see a bunch of people do it, and then it's like, as soon as it's fully proven out, or you may be one of the other groups where you're like, hey, I'm willing to take a risk to some degree, or I got some buddies that are like, nosedive in, love this stuff every single day. And so what would you say to some of the folks that are a little more resistant or hesitant to it? Because there are people listening, they're like, I make enough money, it's fine. Yeah. My clients aren't really asking for it. And there's nothing pressing in the moment for them to change. How do you talk to that group that resistance may be more of an instinct to them than kind of run into the new frontier?
So back in my consulting days, I did a lot of projects around adoption of new tech. One of the pieces that was most important to firms was the financial planning software. And you can see at some of these big firms, they had an enterprise license and only 8% of all clients had an adopted financial plan. And so there was this huge discrepancy because advisors were saying, hey, we want that thing, we want that value, and yet nobody was really using it. When we conducted primary research to determine why, the one thing that really came to fruition was advisors didn't want to use something that could disrupt the trust that they had built with their clients. And using financial planning software live, on the screen, and then you not knowing as the advisor exactly how to use the tool and, maybe doing something wrong. And now the client is judging your performance, or you have at least perceived that they are. Nothing is worth that. So the incremental gains you could get from a financial planning software, and even if they were monumental, would never be worth disrupting the trust you have with that client, because the trust is the glue holding on. That equals retention. So for this new tech, Jump, AI tech, it's all about, our guiding light, like I've said, is just elevating client experience. We'll never put an advisor in a position that it ever compromises the trust they have with a client. I would say there are easy ways for those people to test this technology without having to scale it across their practice. You choose which calls Jump joins. You don't have to have a join every call. You can do some test calls with friends to at least get a feel for the outputs. I can't say with complete certainty that everybody should adopt every piece of tech. There are some guys that are making a great living. And business as usual is business as usual. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if you do care about the client, if you're looking for ways to enhance your client experience and your relationships, deepen them, then it's worth a shot, and you could do so in some riskless ways.
Yeah. Well said. Liam, I appreciate you, brother. This was really helpful.
Stan, thanks for having me on. Please have me back anytime. This was a pleasure for me.
You got it. Thanks, bud.